Record Spins here on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm Ross Reynolds. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Michigan's ban on affirmative action. Voters in the state of Michigan passed Prop 2 back in 2006, and it prohibited universities from using a student's race, ethnicity, or gender as a factor in granting admission. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in the majority decision that this case, quote, is not about how the debate about racial preferences should be resolved. It is about who may resolve it, end quote. Here to explain this case to us and its possible significance here in Washington State is Marcia Coyle. She covers the Supreme Court as the chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. Marcia, thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ross.
So explain what Justice Kennedy meant by saying it's not about how the debate about racial preferences is resolved, but about who may resolve it.
Well, first, I think he took great pains to make clear that this case was not about the constitutionality or the merits of race-conscious admissions policies. In fact, the Supreme Court has held that universities may consider race, that there is a compelling interest in a diverse student body, okay? So affirmative action, if you want to call it that, others prefer to call it race-conscious preferences are constitutional. What he meant was the question here was whether voters can debate and after debate decide whether there should be racial preferences in their educational institutions, admissions policies, or not. He ultimately decided that there is a right to participate in the democratic process, to debate these controversial issues, and there is nothing in the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment that prevents voters from deciding that they do not want to have race-conscious admissions policies.
Now, Justice Sonia Sotomayor's dissent said in part that the Constitution does not give the majority free rein to erect selective barriers against racial minorities. It sounds as though she did say this is a change.
Yes, she did. She read, I think it was the first time this term that she has read a portion of her dissent from the bench, which is always an indication that a justice feels very strongly. And she said the court here had abdicated its special role in safeguarding the interests of groups that may be in need of extraordinary protection from basically from majority rule in our political process. And she felt that what the state of Michigan had done here with this initiative, this amendment to its constitution, was really to make the playing field very uneven, that racial minorities in Michigan now cannot try to convince their public universities to consider race in their admissions plans, but anybody else can lobby those colleges for other types of preferences, like legacy. You know, if you're a graduate and you want your child to go there, you can seek a preference for your child. Sports preferences, all of those can groups can use all of those interests to lobby at colleges for preferences. But the only thing that can't be talked about, she said, is race. And that, she felt, is altering the political process. The only way minority groups can get colleges to consider race is if they actually change the state constitution.
Marcia Coyle is with us. She covers the Supreme Court as the chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. Back in 2006, the Supreme Court ruled on a similar case involving Seattle public schools in one other district, and the court found that public school systems cannot seek to achieve or maintain integration through measures that take into explicit account a student's race. How do the Supreme Court rulings in the Seattle case and then again today on the Michigan ban on affirmative action affect schools' efforts to achieve diversity to end segregation?
Well, Ross, the Seattle case, you're absolutely right, was very much a part of this Michigan case. The lower federal appellate court in Michigan had relied on the Seattle case from 2006. The Seattle case was decided 1982. That was when Washington residents amended their state constitution to prohibit busing to desegregate schools. And the lower federal appellate court in the Michigan case looked to that decision where the Supreme Court struck down the state of Washington's anti-busing amendment to strike down the Michigan amendment here because it felt that just as the state of Washington did, state of Michigan was altering the political process, was making it, was putting a burden and an injury on racial minorities that no other groups had to bear. But the Supreme Court said today that the lower federal appellate court in the Michigan case had overread the Seattle decision from 1982, that that's not really what that Seattle decision stood for. In Seattle, the Supreme Court said there was an actual injury to racial minorities by the anti-busing amendment, but there was no injury to minorities with the Michigan amendment. This was simply a decision by voters not to allow racial preferences in higher education. So the court distinguished the Seattle case. It didn't overrule it, although two justices wrote separately to say they would overrule it and other cases having to do with altering the political processes.
Finally, Marcia, this case the Supreme Court ruled on today in Michigan had to do with affirmative action, but it also had to do with initiatives because that was what they were ruling on. Washington State has a very strong initiative system. How could this decision affect initiatives here and elsewhere, if at all?
Well, I think, you know, it really depends on the issue that is being raised. Again, the court said in 1982 in the Seattle case that the initiative there presented a serious risk of injury to minorities. So it may well depend on what the issue raised in the initiative is. But I think Justice Kennedy, in his opinion today, made it very clear that he believes the initiative process is a very important process, and it's critical to how the nation resolves controversial issues. It's important that the public debate those issues and then use the initiative process in order to try to resolve the questions that come up.
Marcia Coyle, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ross. Call anytime.
You can read Marcia in the National Law Journal, where she's the chief Washington correspondent. She's also the author of the book, The Roberts Court. You are listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle.